Hello and welcome to Father Figures, a show about parenting with an emphasis on fatherhood, uncommon fathers, fathers of all stripes. Here is where we explore the joys and griefs, the risks and rewards of being a dad. I'm Stephen Amaya. Sometimes metaphors happen in life naturally. Instead of being conjured up, they just emerge like butterflies. One such metaphor occurred when I interviewed my guest on today's episode. His name is Gulliver Kimball, and to set the scene, he's 46, lives here in the Northwest in a 28-foot travel trailer with his wife and three of his five kids. Now, if you can imagine five people in that many square feet, then you may have some idea as to why, in order to keep the din to a minimum, he chose to do the interview from his cell phone out in his car. While the audio fidelity may leave something to be desired, I think you'll find the content more than compensates for the sound quality. I started out by asking him how he is similar to his father.
I'd say my dad and I both have, we both share a love for the outdoors and for, we've done a lot of fishing and pheasant hunting together. We used to do big game hunting, but I'm not so into that. But I do like bird hunting a lot. It's a lot less expensive than trying to go elk hunting.
That's true.
A lot of gear.
You would say you're like your father in that you were into hunting in the past, but what sort of traits do you have that are similar?
Well, you know, a lot of deep down in the core, I think that there's both of us have a sense of a need to help others. And then just in a general sense, people kind of joke about us being almost clones.
Oh, really?
If he were on the phone with us right now, you would have a difficult time distinguishing us from our voice. And our we look a lot alike, especially in our younger pictures, right? When we're the same age. You know, we look a lot alike. We even kind of dressed alike through our 20s and stuff like that. So yeah, people kind of joke that I'm his twin, so to speak.
Wow.
It is funny, our mannerisms, everything. And it's kind of embarrassing sometimes because we react the same way with each other in the same room. And people are like, well, that was weird. You know?
And you're okay with that.
I mean, I am now, right? No, I love my dad. He's going to be, well, no, he just turned 82.
Wow.
Yeah, 82 this February, and my mom is 81.
Wow.
She's 80. I'm sorry. She just turned 80. Yeah. So, yeah, they're still around. I love them to death. We've been through, you know, every adventure a parent and child could go through 46 years.
Now, what did he do for a living?
My dad was a regional administrator for Department of Social and Health Services in Washington State.
What's the best memory you have of your dad?
You know, I have a lot of different memories with him. Probably one of the best. You know, my dad and I spent a lot of time together. Not to say that my mom and I didn't, but it was a different kind.
Yeah.
Right.
And you were a lot like your dad too, so.
Yeah, I was. And so I would say my favorite, because it was so influential and so, you know, kind of, it was very enriching, is when I was, he was a runner, right? He was a long distance runner. He did marathons, quite a few of them before and after I was born. But I think in the mid-80s, he quit doing marathons. Anyway, so I started running with him, right? And so through from middle school all the way through the end of high school, I was, you know, running with him every evening and training for long distance event, you know, for competition. I was in the cross-country team and the track team. And him teaching me and coaching me and you know, that process there, I think because of the age as well, that's one of my favorite moments of him really encouraging me to do well and, you know, teaching me a lot of things that I need to know. you know, the trips fishing and stuff like that were priceless, but maybe less, less admired because we were getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to get down there. So
yeah,
and it was cold.
Can you walk us through a chronology of your children? You have five, correct?
Yes, correct. Yeah, quite a distance of time there. Yeah. So I have a stepdaughter from my first marriage, who is 27, 28 now.
Yeah.
Yeah, 28. And then I have an 18-year-old son with my first wife. And then I have a 10-year-old daughter with a different lady,
mm-hmm.
Whom I dated. And then I have a set of 4.5-year-old twins with my now wife.
To round out twins of all things.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's just, it is, you know, I thought once, you know, after my 10-year-old daughter, you know, I was pretty much done, you know, my age and everything else. And, you know, I wasn't planning on having any more children. And when I met my wife, you know, my kids are pretty stellar kids. If I toot my own horn, but you know, that's not just me, that's them as well, right?
Beep, beep.
So, but they're great kids. And my wife is like, wow, I had no idea that you could have small human beings be this great, right?
Oh, that's
and she's
wonderful.
Like, I want some. Yeah, it really, it was nice. And so she's talking about this and she's like, I'm serious. I really want to, you know, I'm really thinking that I want to have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay. But this is happening yesterday because at the time I was 41.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I don't know about you, but I was hurting at 35. So 41, I was already done, yeah. You know, like holding babies for extended periods of time and all that kind of stuff. It's hard work, right?
Yes. And you imagine a college graduation where you are wheeled on a hospital bed to the ceremony.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, no, you do the math real quick there when you're sitting there going, oh man, this has got to happen real quick if we want to really have quality time here. So and then she just went out and she decided that she was going to have two at once instead of just keeping it cool, right?
Now
but no, it was a blessing.
Now you mentioned that you were in a travel trailer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
And that must be interesting.
It's a challenge.
I bet. Yeah.
It's not so bad. You know, my wife and I are lucky.
Well, you have great kids too. So.
Yeah, we have fantastic children. My wife and I love each other very much.
Yeah.
It's kind of gross. you know. And so being that close with each other in that confined space isn't terrible. We enjoy being close to each other. Our kids, you know, her and I, everybody, we don't mind that so much, but it is a challenge in that there's no separation. Where, you know, everybody needs their own time sometimes.
Yeah.
Right? The kids need their own time. Mom and dad need their own time.
Yeah.
And that's where things can agitate and come to conflict.
Yeah.
Right. It's noisy when it rains. You can't hear anything. The outside walls, right? There's a lot of little things that you don't think about. Like, well, how bad could it be, right?
Yeah.
Except for the confined space, maybe. But there's certain things that we can't really cook that we're used to cooking because the stove is only a certain size.
Yeah.
The oven is only a certain size. And, you know, like I said, the noise, the moisture problems that arise with five bodies being in a trailer. You know, there's condensation in trailers, so there's a lot of different things, storage, that good stuff.
How long do you think you'll be in this situation?
We're looking at another 11 months or so.
For those of you left alive, that'll be very interesting.
It'll be great for us, right? well and listen, we're moving in after that gets built. We'll have 2.5 acres, and then we'll have a house that is 9 times the size of this trailer.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that, you know, you and your wife were in love. Can you describe what it's like to fall in love instantly, which you mentioned you did?
Well, yeah. It can be quite scary. But, yeah, it was a situation where, you know, I was, I'd been broken up with my last relationship for a little while. My wife was just coming off of a divorce, herself, that had apparently, you know, had been over for a while. So her mourning process for the divorce wasn't exactly, what you might imagine. You know, it was pretty quick. So anyway, we met and, we both laughed because we met on a dating app, and we really probably shouldn't have met because we didn't have our distances. You can tell the app how far away from where you live you want to meet people.
Right.
Right. And she lives just over an hour away from where I used to live. Right.
Okay.
And so that's, you know, I didn't want to drive that far. She didn't want to drive that far. So why would either one of us have our dating radius set that far?
Yeah.
But we met anyway. Right. We talked on the phone, and I got off the phone with her and looked at my son and said, wow, that one's trouble. You know, like, she is really neat, because I was cracking up the whole time. I mean, it was a great conversation.
Oh,
right. And then she says that she got off the phone and looked at her roommate and was like, oh man, I think I might be falling in love.
Oh,
like,
wow.
This guy, I'm gonna be in trouble with this guy. So yeah, it was a silly little love story. I got her a ring within about a week, about a week and a half maybe.
Yeah.
And she's like, is this an engagement ring? And I was like, no, it's not an engagement ring, but it's like, nobody can talk to you anymore. Like, you're mine, okay?
Not possessive at all.
No, not at all. But yeah, no more dating. This is you and me right now.
Oh, that's great. That's a great story.
So yeah, and it's great, and it's all about, you know, we communicate with each other really well. We're lucky that we're both able to do that. You know, and just keep feeding the marriage and feeding the family, you know?
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
Just a little shift in the subject.
Sure.
You're sober, and you've been sober for how long now?
We're coming up on 11 years this July.
That's
so
great. That's great.
Yeah, over 10 years.
Yeah.
Was
it difficult?
You know, it is at first. I have a lot of great motivators to keep me sober here. So there's, I drank for a long time, good 15, almost 20 years, and pretty steadily rising as the years go on in terms of quantity and priorities shifting more towards alcohol and all that kind of stuff, right? I'll be honest with you, with my first divorce, or my only divorce, that really put me into a dark hole. My son was 5 years old at the time. I had to move away, so I saw him every other weekend. It was really, I didn't want that marriage to end, all that kind of stuff, right? So that just, you know, I'm not blaming anybody, but that didn't make things any better in terms of trying to crawl down to the bottom of the bottle.
Right.
And there was an evening where a friend of mine came to visit me at work. And he's like, I'm here. We've got a designated driver. It was his father. And he's like, we're staying here till you're off work, and we're going to go close the bar down the street, you know. So he was ready to drink all night, and of course I was too, right? So I was like, sweet. So I just tied one on, right? And bars were starting to close, and I we were getting ready to go, and I asked my friend who had taken my keys already. I said, "Hey, can I grab my keys? I want to go grab that leftover pizza out of my truck because I'm gonna have the, you know, the drunk munchies, right?" So anyway, he gives me my keys. I get to my truck, and instead of just grabbing the pizza, I take off.
Yeah.
So I drove home. Luckily, I was alone, and nobody else is on the road. I used to live down a way, you know, windy, very remote country road. And it's, you know, it's windy, it's curvy, it's hilly. And there's a bridge over the Chehalis River on the way there, right? You cross over the Chehalis River, and it's literally the only straight part on this road.
Yeah.
And I took a hard left right into the cement wall on the bridge on the opposite lane, right? Excuse me.
Did you signal?
So, yeah. I think I did one of those biker signals, right? I put my arm up to the pointing left. Yeah, that left me severely injured. My truck was totaled, obviously. There's still a mark on that wall from where I hit.
Wow.
I see it all the time because it's on my way to my parents' house. I ended up breaking my jaw in half right in between the bottom teeth directly in front.
Oh, wow.
So I broke that directly in half. I also broke my left cheekbone. It was flattened and now has a metal plate there instead of actual bone.
Yeah.
And I have a plate or, you know, some metal brackets on my jaw. And my ear on the left side actually got sliced because I had the window partway open.
Oh.
And my momentum, I think, hit that window. That's the only thing I can think of. But
yeah.
Anyway, my ear was sliced. So there's a nice scar there where they put the very tip of my ear back on.
Wow. That was awesome.
Yeah. And so obviously I was highly intoxicated. With addiction, it's, you know, it's not always up to you.
Sometimes
the addiction decides for you.
Yeah.
So, anyway, after that, I spent, a full year in classes.
Did you go to AA meetings?
I did.
Okay.
I had to, part of the court, thing, you know, they want you to go to so many meetings, and I fulfilled that. I didn't, I'll be honest with you, I didn't try more than two different AA groups.
Uh-huh.
And those meetings just weren't,
it's
not bad. And they have all these tools and it's a great program, obviously very successful, but not everything is for everybody.
Right, needs to fit.
And
yeah.
In those particular groups, it felt like more of a, everybody was telling their drunk stories like it was glory days.
Yeah.
And, there's nothing looking back on that. It's a lot of shame for me. There's nothing I want to celebrate there necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just didn't, it wasn't, I filled my duty with those groups with the court and everything. And that was fine. But what really helped me was the,
That's great.
I haven't had a drink since that night, since that wreck. I haven't had,
That's great.
A drink. And it just scared the heck out of me. And there's history there too. You know, I fell off a building in Japan, when I was 20, cause I was drinking. It was the 4th of July. They celebrated over there, oddly enough.
Oh, really?
And so my friend and I went and bought a bunch of firecrackers, a bunch of bottle rockets. Right. And, we drank for like 3 hours at this, you know, place where you can sit down and it's all you can eat and all you can drink with a party of at least 10 people and you pay $20.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we got, you know, snozzled there.
Yeah.
Went up to the roof of our dorm that was three stories high and started setting off these bottle rockets at each other. And so we're running around on this roof like idiots. And I'm looking at my buddy as he's lighting and aiming at me and I'm not looking where I'm going. And I ran straight off this roof.
Whoa.
Just right off.
How badly were you hurt?
The next minute I'm gone. I broke, the lower, vertebrae. I fractured it.
Wow.
So I was in the hospital for a while in a, cast and all that kind of stuff for about 3 months.
Whoa.
But I didn't ever lose, you know, mobility, any sensation or anything like that. I was never paralyzed at any point. It's close, but it didn't get me. So yeah, it was obvious that alcohol has caused problems in periods of my life.
Yeah. Did you have alcoholic parents?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. My mom, her whole family.
Yeah.
Heavy drinkers. I thought it was normal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
I when I got to college and I had friends and they talk about their families that don't drink, and I'm like, what do you mean? I don't understand. It was like they said that they don't eat.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Like it was very foreign to me because of the way that I was raised. And my dad, I don't think I'd call him an alcoholic. He can drink and it he can turn it down. It doesn't matter. He can have one.
Mm-hmm.
He'll decide to have more than one, you know, but it's never really been an issue for him. My mom, for as long as I can remember, drank wine.
Yeah.
All day, every day.
Mm.
She quit drinking about a year or two after I quit.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Now, do you have brothers and sisters?
Really positive. Yeah, I have two older sisters.
All right. Oh, older sisters. So they were aware of the drinking, too.
Yeah, much more aware than I was. I think they kind of shielded it from me because, you know, once you kind of look at your memories through a different lens, you realize kind of what was going on there.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and you're like, oh, that's why I acted like that when I was drinking. That makes sense.
Yeah.
You know?
And isn't it funny how, as you get older, you feel your parents coming through you?
You know? Yes.
And you realize how not distant you are from this genetic line that's been going on for, you know, millennia. You know, you can
absolutely
only go so far. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
It really is interesting. And then to see your kids too, right?
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. And to see your own traits in your child. Oh
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is a lot of fun. My wife actually, I told her I was going to call the police if she kept attacking me because she pointed out something that one of our twins do. She's got this thing where she says that she's fine when she hurts herself, right?
Uh-huh.
As 4-year-olds do throughout the day.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, are you okay? And she's like, no, I'm fine. Leave me alone. And she says that, I'm fine. And just like, that's it, right? She wants everybody to forget it ever happened. The other one is like, I need all the love and all the things because I have this imaginary injury, like, you know, she'll almost make something up to get that, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, Fiona, the one that's like, I'm fine, my wife said this morning, she goes, yeah, that reminds me of you when you're frustrated and somebody says something, you're like, I'm fine, get out of here.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, shoot. You know, and it's not meant to be, I just want to deal with it. I'm, you know, like, don't worry, you know, gotta deal with this on my own type of thing. Stuff that you don't realize that you do, and then your partner points it out in a kid, and it is also definitely something that you do.
Guilty.
It's pretty funny. I didn't want kids, first of all,
oh, really?
Growing up. Yeah, I was not into it. I wanted to be Captain Selfish and free and, you know, doing whatever I want all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then after, you know, my stepdaughter was great, obviously. And she was 6 years old when I met her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we decided to have my son. You know, after having him, I was like, well, that was foolish. You know, I definitely love having kids. I tell you, I'd be one of those dads with like 20 kids by now.
Oh, really? Now,
really do love children. But,
have you ever considered being a stay-at-home dad full time?
Yeah, I would love to be able to do that. And I mean, I do it full time now,
mm-hmm.
right? And
mm-hmm.
I have since the girls were born. I cannot do it for the extended future.
Yeah.
Because with this house being
you need
built,
income. Yeah.
You know, this is a couple months ago, I applied for jobs and it just, nobody's calling me back.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. I'm 46 and unemployable. It's interesting. And also looking back, like on my pretty short tenure here as a stay-at-home dad, you know, did I make the most of it, right? And all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, looking back at the memories and, you know, and what can I do from now until I start working? How can I squeeze a little bit more in there or whatever, right? So there's a sense of the girls are going to start school here in about 6 months and my son can babysit. So I just started applying for jobs that had any schedule, day, whatever, right? And let him babysit depending on what kind of job I got. So, you know, between the two, my wife is so supportive that it's almost convoluting it because she just wants, you know, she's supporting both equally for me. And I'm rich with choice. And it's a problem with that saying.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. You have I know what you mean though.
Anyway, I've got a lot of choices that a lot of people would kill for. And here I am stressing about it. There's a big draw. Chunk of money right now
and then
try for something else later, you know.
Make the chunk of money now because this is the youngest you'll ever be.
And that's just it too, is I've loved being a stay-at-home dad. I've always wanted to with my older kids and didn't have that opportunity when the girls were born with my youngest, the twins, there was almost no choice. One of us needed to stay home because daycare was going to eliminate the salary. And point, right?
Yeah. It's a crime how much it is now. Oy.
Oh, it's Right.
Yeah.
I can't fathom it, but, you know, it is what it is now. And then, you know, with them being in school and stuff, it'll be fine. But it was a real treat being a stay-at-home dad.
Well, Gulliver Kimball, I want to thank you for being a guest on Father Figures.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I don't know if I would have the patience to live in a 28-foot trailer with four other people for a year and a half. Gulliver's building a new house the way a man or woman builds a new life. And therein lies the metaphor. A person doesn't build a house by oneself, just as one doesn't build a life of sobriety by oneself. And it happens one day at a time, and it's work, like building your new house. I want to thank Jason Shaw of Audionautix.com for the music, and CeCe Blanca for production assistance. And of course, thanks again to Gulliver Kimball for his gracious candor. If you'd like to get in touch with me, please send along an email to radiorancero@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. And remember, the days may be long, but the years are short. Bye-bye.